This is the Dakota Free Press Podcast. My name is Spencer Dobson.
And I'm Corey Heidelberger. In today's podcast,
fund a wall, says Terry LaFleur.
Get registered to vote. Municipal elections are coming soon.
And a doubleheader interview. We talk to Aaron Schultz, Aberdeen School Board candidate, and Mark Remily, Aberdeen City Council candidate.
How are we doing this week, Corey?
We're doing great, Spencer.
Good. I got some really good feedback from our podcast.
We got feedback?
Some friends of mine were listening to it while they were cleaning their house. And they said, wow, this is a really smart podcast. And I said, Corey makes that easy because he's really smart. And they said, you sound smart too. But I think they might have been saying that just to make me feel better. But Mike and Darcy, thanks for listening to the podcast. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, Mike, Darcy, hope you got the house cleaned.
I'm pretty sure they did. So first of all, if you want to throw us a couple of bucks to keep this podcast going because it is smart, there is a tip jar on the side of the website or in the comment section of each post. So if you got a couple of extra bucks and you want to keep the Dakota Free Press free and functioning, please, whatever you can do would be much appreciated. Don't we have something coming up?
We do, yes. On Friday this week, we're having a March for Healthcare here in Aberdeen.
Awesome.
That's Friday, May 19th. Usually we have, progressive happy hour, but this week we're doing an actual outdoor demonstration. We're hoping the weather will be nice Friday. 5 o'clock at the ward. This is on Main and First downtown.
Right.
Bring your signs, bring a friend, and we're going to march down Main Street just to say, hey, we want better healthcare policy than what the Congress has been offering us so far.
Nice.
We'll walk down the street, come back to the ward at 6, and then at 6, even if you don't want to march with us, you can drop by the ward at 6. We're hoping to have a couple of speakers, and we invite you to come and just tell your stories about, what you've experienced in healthcare with your health insurance, and maybe, tell us what your concerns are about what the current politics might do to your health insurance.
Awesome. I will be in the Black Hills while that's happening, but I wish I could be there.
Hey,
I apologize.
The hills are a great place to be. Hope you don't need any health care while you're out there. You're just visiting and traveling? What are you doing in the hills?
I'm doing a show. I'm doing a show at the Naked Winery, and my wife and I are going out a day early to stay in the hotel we had our honeymoon in because our anniversary is coming up, so it's going to be very nice.
Boy, you can't working and playing in the hills. You can't
yeah, that's
that.
Comedy, man. It's work and play all the time. It's just great. So, we're doing kind of a different format this week. We're going to you and I will talk for a little bit, and then we've got some really good interviews with some really good people that are running for office in Aberdeen. So let's get our stuff out of the way so we can let these soon-to-be elected officials have their say. Number one, speaking of elected officials, did you know literally anybody can run for governor no matter how wackadoo?
Hey, that's what democracy's all about. Everybody gets a chance to run.
This is just fantastic. And I would really like to talk to Terry. I don't think after I called him a wackadoo, he's going to be on the podcast, but you never know.
You never know. Terry LaFleur, Republican candidate for governor, right?
Republican candidate for governor. Why? He's crowdsourcing the Mexico wall.
Wait
he wants to go fund me because since Congress wouldn't sign off on it and the Senate wouldn't sign off on it, he's like, you know what? We're going to take this bajillion, gadillion dollar deal to the American people because I'm sure it's in your couch. It didn't work already.
They made it to the top
and they said no. Why would you go back down to the bottom with and try and get people to... it's a scam.
Let me back this up. Terry LaFleur is running for South Dakota governor, right?
Yes.
But
by the way, we don't have a Mexican border.
And he's making one of his main political activities right now.
Yes.
Raising money to build a national infrastructure project 1,500 miles away from the state that he wants to govern.
Bingo.
You know, I appreciate a man of many interests, but I also recognize that candidates need a little thing called focus.
Here's a tip for you, shopper and voter, if you would like to, and I could be wrong, but I feel like this is kind of a good tip, like a red flag to let you know what you're getting. This is the first line. If you go to Terry's website,
Terry LaFleur's website,
the first line after he says, hi, I'm Terry LaFleur. First line, I've been known to be wrong from time to time. No kidding, Terry. I can see why you would open with that.
Well, and if he's advocating a wall on the Mexican border, and he's advocating everybody chipping in $20 to do it. Yep, he's proven himself right on that. He is wrong about things from time to time.
But let me read on.
Oh, yes.
But I always admit my own mistakes and own them. But today, I announce my intention to run for the office of governor of the state of South Dakota in 2018 gubernatorial election. As my wife likes to remind me, this is a mistake. Look, man, listen to your wife. Listen to the people around you. I'm sure she says a lot of stuff to them, like stop eating glass and don't lick the fire. Things like that. She, yes. Come on, Terry. This is a bad plan, man.
I've found in 15 years, and we had our 15-year anniversary this month, in 15 years, when my wife has said to me, Corey, that's a mistake. Thank you very much. She didn't say 15 years is a mistake. We're still both good on that.
Right.
But when my wife has said that is a mistake,
right,
I think she's been right just about every time.
I'm a communication major, and if I have a BS in communication, conveniently, that stands for Bachelor's of Science.
I've heard of those, yes.
This is just a tip to young people who might be looking to go into political office. Don't open the thing that introduces you to the public with, I'm probably wrong. And I tend to be wrong a lot, and the people around me like to remind me of that.
Sure. There's humility, and there's bad marketing.
Yeah, and this is humiliatingly bad marketing.
Wow, I'll buy that. Now, I will not, and we should know, Terry LaFleur, I mean, he's running for governor, so hopefully he'll, if were he to win that position against Kristi Noem and Marty Jackley, were he to be governor, he'd never actually be making decisions on immigration, because this is a federal issue.
Yeah.
But even on the wall itself, I looked up his site, and I was thinking about that, and I thought, you know, private fundraising for a public infrastructure project is wrong. Because number one, well, the wall he's talking about, this is Donald Trump's wall that he got into office by saying Mexico would pay for it. So hold on.
Right.
Get Mexico to pay for it. Number two, if we really need a public works project, it ought to be paid for by public dollars. Just like public schools. We don't run our public schools on bake sales. That's no way to run a republic. If a wall really is needed, it should be funded by all the taxpayers. It serves all the taxpayers. Everybody should pay for it. But number three, we don't need it. The wall won't work. You build a wall, they'll build tunnels. You dig it down, they'll send the drugs and immigrants in boats. There's all sorts of research out there that says the wall won't work.
Well, and you're lazy because you're not coming up with an idea for you to run on.
Yeah,
I mean, you didn't even bother to go, let's build a wall around South Dakota. You just went, I'm just going to take Trump's idea. And then kids like, go fund me. So we'll do that. And then I think we're going to probably have a pretty good campaign here.
And right now, even if you're going to steal ideas, and this might be the killer for Terry, right now, if you're looking to steal popular ideas and ride someone's coattails, I'm not sure Donald Trump is the guy with the coattails you want to ride at this point.
Not the guy.
Get another horse, Terry.
Let's move on to the next topic.
Yes, Terry, you're welcome on the show, but we're going to move on right now.
Yes. Hey, here's something productive and useful. It's voting time. We're having an election on the 6th for city council and for school board.
Yes, here in Aberdeen, we've got our city election, our school board election, and there are other communities around the state. That first Tuesday in June very often is election time for your local offices.
And you may very well think to yourself, I'd like to vote, but I don't know how to register. And I know that seems, for a lot of people, you're like, we know how to register to vote. But some people don't, and they don't know how to ask, or they don't want to ask. I don't know that they'd be listening to this podcast, but just in case somehow it slipped through the cracks, just here real quick, here's how you register to vote. Local county auditor's office, local driver's licensing office, a city finance office, a public assistance agency that provides food stamps, the Department of Human Services offices, a military recruitment agency. You can get info to register by mail by following the link that we will put in the comment section.
Yeah, and we'll put a couple of links up there. A really important one that I'll mention now is the Secretary of State's website. Mm-hmm. Now, that's not Rex Tillerson doing international diplomacy. That's the South Dakota Secretary of State, Chantel Krebs. It's sdsos.gov. We'll put the link on the site as well. But that has all the information you need to get registered as well.
And this is from the DMV. The link that I gave you.
Yes.
So you've got 15 days before the election. If you're not registered within 15 days of the election, you don't get to vote.
That's correct. And this varies from state to state. So especially if you've just moved here to South Dakota, keep this in mind. Some states let you walk in and register the day of the election.
Right.
Some states don't even do voter. I think North Dakota doesn't even do voter registration.
Right.
If they have records that you live there, you can walk in and vote. But here in South Dakota, you have to be on the books to register to vote 2 weeks and a day before the election. For those of us, like here in Aberdeen, we've got a vote on June 6th. That means this coming Monday, May 22nd, is the deadline to get registered to vote. If you're not registered as of Monday, you don't get to show up on June 6th and vote.
Well, and again, if you're in South Dakota, I don't think you have an excuse. Like, if you're in a big city where you have to park and then you have to wait in line and then everything takes forever. But if you're in South Dakota, there's no line. It's a 2-minute process.
Right.
Just go to one of these offices or get it in the mail. And there's no reason not to do this.
Yep.
And if you're listening to this podcast, you obviously care a little bit. So come on.
And like Spencer said, it is just a 2-minute process. It's one form.
Yeah.
You write down your name, your address. You check a couple boxes to say, yep, I'm an adult. Yep, I'm an American. Boom. And you're in. There's no fee to it. There's no hassle to it. They take care of it. And one other little thing I'll note. When I've done voter registration before. You know, I've gone door to door, whatever. Say, you want to vote? You want to register? Blah, blah, blah. And some people don't want to register because they think that, oh, if I register to vote, then I'm up for jury duty. And so they think keeping their name off the voter registration somehow keeps them from getting called for jury duty. I'll say two things. One, jury duty's cool. Why wouldn't you want to
jury duty's
that?
A privilege.
And it's something Americans should do. It's a fair kind of service.
Yeah.
Number two, voter registration isn't not registering to vote won't keep you off. If you have a car, they pull jurors from the driver's license registry as well. So if you've got a car, you're already down for jury duty. You might as well get registered to vote.
I've never thought about that hustle.
It's there.
And what a whiny reason to not participate in your democracy.
Yeah, I mean, and consider it.
You're
going to get called for jury duty maybe once every 10 years,
and
20
it'll be,
years.
It might be fun.
It'll be. You'll get to see criminals or maybe innocent people and help exonerate them.
Right.
But either way, if you've got a car, you're already down for jury duty.
Geez,
elections come every couple of years. You get local elections every year.
Yeah.
This is democracy. Come and do it with us.
Let's talk to some people that have clearly registered to vote and may very well have served on jury duty. I don't know. But these were both really good interviews. We've got a really good field of candidates this time around. And, you know, I realized the nice thing about doing this on a podcast is people can listen to this anytime they want, any hour of the day, any day they want. So we're trying to get as many of these folks in as we can. And hopefully this will help you make an informed decision. So with that, let's do it.
Hi, my name's Aaron Schultz. I'm running for the school board for this 3-year term. I've been a lifelong resident of Aberdeen. I was born in Huron, but primarily raised here in Aberdeen since I was the age of 3. Proud graduate of Aberdeen Central, class of 95. From there, I was able to continue my education at the University of South Dakota, undergrad my master's there, and from there, started a career within public service in the nonprofit world. And so my first job out of college was working for the United Way in Sioux Falls. From there, I continued education in Brookings, and that led me out to Washington, D.C. For a couple of years working for a nonprofit group out there called First Nations Development Institute, which worked on indigenous rights around the country and around the world, actually. And raising a family out in Washington, D.C. was a little bit of a rat race. And so that brought us back home in 2006, where I started teaching at Presentation College and just getting involved in the community as much as possible. And then about 4 years ago, had the opportunity to apply for the position at the United Way and have been the director there ever since.
Sure. Now, so you said you've spent your entire adult career, it sounds like, in the nonprofit sector, in that form of public service, correct?
Yep, and teaching.
Okay,
teaching at the collegiate level at Presentation College.
Right. So tell me about that nonprofit experience and how you think that experience will help you be a good school board member.
Yeah, you know, I have either led boards or reported to a board or sat on boards for most of my professional career. I've seen a variety of different makeups for board of directors, and I've seen what's worked effectively and what may have not worked as effectively. And so my philosophy on board participation is the boards are supposed to look to the future. They're supposed to let the people work that need to work, that are in the daily grind each and every day. That's going to be our teachers. That's going to be our administrators. That's going to be our staff people. The board is supposed to be the ones that are advocating, looking towards the future and saying, okay, what's going to be the next 5 years? What's going to be the next 10 years? The best piece of advice I ever received was from one of my board members that said, you know, Aaron, just go ahead and lead us, and we'll let you know if you're getting off path. And that really, to me, kind of summed up what I think a board should do. Just continue to let the people do the work. We've hired the right people. Dr. Guffin's doing a great job. Her administration's doing a great job. Let them do the work, and we'll tell them, you know, the path that they should continue down.
Okay. And in the nonprofit sector, especially with United Way, a lot of your work is fundraising. I guess school boards don't necessarily, they don't fundraise in the same sense, but how does your fiscal experience in United Way and other nonprofits, how does that translate into your look at how the school board goes about getting the money it needs to do the job?
Well, as we talked a little bit off mic, we're right in the process for United Way of allocating the monies that we raised. Working with public dollars is similar to working with tax dollars as well. We help supplement 37 different programs in our region, and we'll never have enough money to meet all the need. And so we have 30 volunteers that are out there trying to determine what the best use of our dollars are. And our board ultimately makes that final recommendation on that. Same holds true with the board of directors, for the school board. The movement, I guess you'd want to say, is taking the direction from Dr. Guffin, also their finance folks there, Tom Janish, who I've met with a number of the administration, and they talk about what a great job he does.
Tom Janish is the business manager, correct, for the district.
Yep. And what they've said to me was that the administrators have said that they understand that there's never going to be enough money in the coffers, but they understand the reasoning behind the decisions that are being made. And at the end of the day, as long as people can understand the process and where the decisions were being made, I can live with that. And, you know, as a board member, we're going to have to make some tough decisions and help approve and get community input on that as well. You know, the budgeting process is open to the public as well. And so that feedback is available for the public as well. But my work in the nonprofit sector obviously carries over into that because, again, we have more need than we have resources. And so you have to make those choices. A lot of times they're very tough choices.
You've already gathered some input, it sounds like, from the superintendent, from Mr. Janish, from others, about the fiscal priorities in the district. Have you gotten any sign that maybe on the board you would want to move some of those dollars around? Are there some programs that you think aren't getting enough dollars that we could find the dollars for?
You know, and I haven't met with Mr. Janish, but with the administrators, they have respected their decisions that, you know, Mr. Janish has put forth for as far as the budget goes. You know, and honestly, I'm not probably at that point where I can say we should have dollars here or there, just because I'm not a part of the board yet and have really jumped into that budgeting cycle. I've received some input from folks on where we need to potentially look at new avenues, but I need to educate myself further on where those dollars are at and also get some justifications from the people that are presenting on why those dollars are where they're at right now.
Sure. Looking at the staff side of things, and I'll do my own disclosure. I'm sort of staff. I'm a substitute teacher, and I've taught in other districts, so I'm certainly interested in, you know, the quality of teachers in the district. And as a parent, too. I've got a daughter moving through the system. What's your perspective as a board member on what you'll be looking for when you go through the applications for new staff coming into the district? What kind of teachers do you want in Aberdeen?
Obviously, you want the best teachers that you can find, and the criteria that make that up can be varied. But Obviously, you want the right credentials, and you want them experienced in the areas that they want to focus in on as well. You know, the younger teachers that are going through Northern right now, they're getting a quality education, and but we want some experienced folks in there as well. The move with technology, you know, the education that people are getting, the newer teachers coming fresh out of college, they're being taught in areas of technology that may not be present at some of our schools right now. And so I see that as an opportunity where some of the funds should be going towards, is making sure that we have the technology that is being taught in certain schools, that we make sure that we have that here in our public schools as well. So when the new teachers are coming into our district, they're coming right out of school with you know, their base knowledge and also that technical knowledge on the newest technologies that are out there. I think technology will always be one of those areas that we need to focus in on, but we also need to train. Absolutely, we need to train on the new technologies that we bring in. We might have a Ferrari, but if you don't know how to drive a manual, it does you no good. And so, and we have to make sure that the teachers that we bring in want that technology as well. And so, you know, there's some old school teachers out there that love to the traditional model of teaching, and you know, for some courses, that's okay.
Yeah, well, and Socrates in his sandals, he got a lot done without a computer.
Absolutely.
Sure. Now, you talked about technology from kind of the teacher perspective. Let's talk about that from a student perspective. And you mentioned earlier that idea that, you know, some of the technology teachers may have trained in just a few years ago or even now. In a few years, that's going to be obsolete. So tell me about your vision for the technology skills you want students to get in the schools.
You know, I think there's a variety of different avenues that we could look at, especially with the tech school. You know, that's that right there, that should be the cutting edge stuff. You know, 3D printers, you know, I know that there's a new generation of that are not 3D printers, but it's kind of that next level stuff. I think the students should be pushing for the technology as well to tell us what is out there in terms of the apps that make things usable for individuals, but also the technology for successfully integrating curriculum. You know, I've taught at a collegiate level for quite some time. You know, you can have a laptop in front of you, but if you're not using it for the proper purposes, it can be a huge detriment to the teaching element as well. And so, you know, we can spin our wheels for quite some time if we try to block everything that's, you know, is good for a computer to have. But I think the technology will always be in front of the student, and we need to make sure that students that want that opportunity to go into that cutting-edge stuff have that opportunity, you know, eventually coding. And that type of language is going to be standard for, I think, for our students. They're going to know how to create the apps. They're going to know how to speak the language of code. And just as I learned on a word processor and thought that was cutting edge technology back in the early 90s, you know, those days are gone. And 10 years from now, we're going to be laughing about talking about code. So.
Sure, and podcasts. We're like, what are those anymore?
Absolutely.
We just have telepathic news now. Why don't we train the kids that?
There you go.
Let's talk about another area of curriculum. The arts are certainly vital here in Aberdeen, both in the school district and, you know, in kind of private dance lessons, music lessons, that kind of thing. I'm wondering what your sense is of the proper place of the arts in our K-12 curriculum and how you would go about making sure that gets the right level of priority in the midst of all the other things that we ask the schools to do.
Yeah, absolutely. The arts, and I think exposure to a number of areas that are just beyond, you know, maybe not the reading, writing, and arithmetic that we so often hear. We need to make sure that the students are exposed to the arts in every fashion. And sometimes maybe even drag them, you know, kicking and screaming, because it's not one of those things that everyone may jump into right away and see that they have that that gift or that passion for. I truly believe that the arts and the humanities need to be stressed. Obviously, you know, we have Common Core issues, things like that, that we need to address, and ultimately, you know, testing, things like that. But I believe that if you're well-versed in the arts, you're well-versed in the humanities, the others come along significantly easier.
What about, then, standardized tests? From a board member perspective, how should a board member in a public school district use the information that we get from standardized tests?
You know, I think it certainly is a measuring rod for us. We need to have some of that, but that doesn't tell the whole story of a particular student. You know, we'll have standardized tests. We'll have thousands of standardized test scores that are out there. I think it's good to identify the trends. You know, the standardized tests that ultimately we all have been through, the SATs, the ACTs, unfortunately, those still weigh pretty heavily on post-secondary education. And I've been in meetings where administrators have said, yes, we teach to the ACT because that's still the measuring rod for post-secondary education. And I'm okay with that. That opens up a world of opportunities. You get into that opportunity scholarship, the region scholarship. You want to have some of that there. I don't believe it tells the whole story of a student's experience throughout school, but it's certainly some things that you have to have there. You know, getting into the Common Core stuff, yes, that's kind of the rule of the land right now, is to have Common Core. So that individual that's coming from North Dakota, Minnesota, wherever, Missouri, and he's coming in as a seventh grader, or she's coming in as a fifth grader, has that same level of education coming in. You know, I like the benchmarks that helps set. You know, educators have that opportunity to see what their benchmarks is, what they need to be teaching towards. It's up to them on the pedagogy of the whole thing and how they want to do that.
It seems lately in the news, at least, there's a lot of talk about the recent immigrant population in the city, and I'm wondering how the school board is addressing the needs of people that maybe didn't start their education in this country, or that have, you know, are from a different culture, and what basically what you're doing to address their needs.
I think we need to continue to address those needs. I was with an administrator that talked about the, you know, changing demographics of our community, and they said, you know, go to an elementary schoolroom and see if you notice any difference with how the kids are playing and interacting. I think that's going to be the challenge for in the future, is making sure that we have the proper staff in place and also the resources in place for folks that maybe the first or second grader is the only one that speaks English, and that communication level. You know, I think we're seeing it across the board. It's not just within education. Obviously, within the social services realm, we've noticed it. In the public service realm, it's something that we need to continue to address. Ultimately, I believe Dr. Guffin and her administrators are the ones to come tell us what they need. We're not in the daily grind of it. Back to the kind of that platform of, we need to have them come to us and tell us what they need.
Spencer asked an interesting question about the new Americans in our community. At the beginning, you mentioned your experience with the first Americans working with indigenous rights. I'm wondering, did you learn anything in your work with indigenous peoples and working for indigenous rights that might help you and the board understand how to deal with the rights of the new Americans that we're trying to incorporate into our community, along with the Native American populations that we have here in Brown County?
Yeah, you know, I'm an enrolled member in Disassembled Wahpeton Sioux Tribe as well, and very proud of that fact as well. You know, I was very fortunate that I was able to travel across the nation to Arizona, to Florida, to Alaska with this job and meet with indigenous people. And really, I think the bottom line thing that I learned was to appreciate the culture and to respect the people that were coming through. The rest was all pretty easy to figure out. You know, if you give basic respect to people and show a general interest in them, the rest usually works itself out. And I think that's something that we need to continue to educate within our own society, in our own little group in Northeast South Dakota as well. And again, like that teacher told me almost a year ago, come to an elementary school and look at the diversity within the classroom setting and, you know, try to point out the differences that these kids are seeing with one another. It's tough to do. They don't see it. They see just another student that they like to play with.
Looking down the road, if you could have one thing happen, or if you could make one thing manifest, or if you could rub a lantern and a genie would grant you one wish for the school system, what would you shoot for?
You know, looking into the future, and I've made no secret of that, is looking at Mike Miller School. We built that to expand it. I think we probably need to start addressing those issues. Class size is always going to be an issue. I think making sure that the students have the resources available and making sure that they're going into state-of-the-art schools, where they're walking in and feeling proud of where they're going. And, you know, we were at Mike Miller last week, and you could see that sense of pride everyone had with their shiny new school. And we need to continue those updates. I feel like we can walk into any school here and feel very proud of each school you walk into. But we need to continue to do that, and that's capital outlay, and that's sometimes that's a difficult thing to look at.
When a kid graduates from school here, what would you like to instill in them that will make them a useful member of society, a useful citizen? What should the takeaway be?
I think the takeaway should be that they can really achieve what they want. I talked to a group of students one time and asked them, how many have you heard? Well, what's next? My question is how are they going to do that next step? Are they going to, try to lead? Are they going to try to follow? Are they going to try to be good stewards of the education that they received? And also point out that we have a lot of people that have been educated through this system that have done great things, and that they are properly prepared, and that they can go out. Part of the reason when I went out to Washington, D.C. is there was always in the back of my mind, can I do this? Can I be on the Hill and talking to people that are Ivy League educated and stand my ground? And I think with the base knowledge that I received here in Aberdeen, I felt like I was very well prepared to do that. And I was lucky enough to be sitting next to another Aberdeen Central graduate, Tom Daschle. I interned out there for him when I was in college and saw what he was able to do when in his time in the Senate as well. And so that inspired me when I saw that. You know, he was going head-to-head and talking to, these huge political leaders, and knowing that he came from the same high school that I graduated from, I thought that was pretty cool.
Aaron, tell us if people want to learn more about your campaign, or if they want to get a hold of you and ask some other questions that we haven't gotten today, what's the best way for them to do that?
I have a Facebook page. It's Schultz for School Board that they can check out. They can always contact me at my, just give my cell phone a call, 605-290-1721. And, I'm open for discussion for any of these topics. I think the more engaged that we are, the better of a society we are. You know, I'm happy that there are five people running for the school board. I think 30 people should be running for the school board. I think we should get the best people in there, because the thing I really enjoy about this is the fact that this isn't a political thing. This is, right now, it's five people that said, I want to help. You know, I'm going to kind of stick my neck out there a little bit and really do the best I can for this community, and ultimately be the sounding board for that as well. And so over my course of my professional career, I've been able to make decisions and stick by those decisions. You know, with those, I'm usually not the first one to speak up. I take in everything. I take in all the information that is available, and from that make my decisions. And that's what I want to bring to the board as well.
Aaron Schultz, candidate for Aberdeen School Board, thank you for visiting with Dakota Free Press today.
All right, thanks for having me on.
Yeah, Aaron, great interview.
Doesn't he have a great voice?
He's got a good voice for podcasts. Mm-hmm. Now, that's a school board election. Our second interview today, we've got Mark Remley, who's an incumbent city councilman right now for the Northeast District in Aberdeen. And Mark wants to serve another 5 years. So let's talk to Mark about his service and why he wants to keep serving Aberdeen.
My name is Mark Remley, and I'm running for a second term in the Northeast District for Aberdeen City Council.
Northeast District. And Mark, roughly which streets would those be between? Who in town gets to vote for you?
That would be east of State Street and north of 6th Avenue.
Now, Mark, you are on the council right now, correct?
Yes.
How long have you been on the council?
It's a five-year term.
Okay, so this is your first term on City Council.
Yes.
And you're running for a second. Why, let's go back 5 years. Why did you choose to run for City Council in the first place?
I was encouraged by a bunch of people. And I know you're going to disagree with me about this because you were a library guy. And there was a whole bunch of people that came to me and said, you need to run because we're not in favor of a library the way they're talking. So I decided to run, not just based on that, but based on also a whole bunch of licensed beverage dealers who felt that they were being picked on by the Aberdeen Police Department. And so I took those two items and decided to run for city council to see if I could help out, see if I could do anything to make their lives better. And I did, and I won, and so here I am.
Sure.
Running
now,
for a second term.
On those two issues, I was at the public forum that the League of Women Voters held last Saturday, and you mentioned the licensed beverage dealers issue.
Correct.
It sounds like in your first 5 years, you got that communication problem taken care of, right?
The first thing I did when I got on council was to change our city liquor law, which was inconsistent with state law, and, counties had different laws for, and most of the counties were vying by state law, and Aberdeen wasn't, and so Brown County, just teamed with Aberdeen and had their own liquor law, and it was very confusing to the liquor dealers, to the consumers, to even law enforcement. It was because everybody has their own interpretation of the law, and so what I did is I just went to our city attorney, and I said, "Man, we need to change this. I mean, this is confusing for everybody." And it was even brought up to the chief of police at that time, and he even supported what I wanted to do, just mirror state law, and so just take away all the confusion about our city law, which was just inconsistent with state law.
Sure. Now, on the other issue you mentioned that got you started on your first term, the library discussion here in Aberdeen, things didn't go the way that you and I think the folks who encouraged you to run, they didn't go the way they wanted, if
no,
I understand it.
You're right.
So how, the folks who wanted you to run last time, are they like, oh, Mark blew it on the library, let's get a different guy? Or do they realize that's the way it goes and they want you to work on other issues now?
Well, it came to a public vote. And having a public vote just solves all the problems, in mm-hmm. my opinion. I was representing a group of people, turned out to be 40% of the Aberdeen population who opposed $8-10 million library, whatever the cost is or was, whatever it turns out to be. And there were some people that put together a petition to bring it to a public vote. And I told the city council that that's what was going to happen, probably, and that we had to spend a bunch of money just to get things started on the library. And but anyway, it turned out that people voted it in, and so what can I say? You win a few, you lose a few.
Sure.
And this wasn't really something that I wanted to win or lose. I wanted to bring it to the people Let them make the decision. And they did.
And represent the voice of those, correct, as you say, it turned out 40% of the population, but at least give those, make sure their voice was heard on the council in the discussion leading up to
correct,
it.
Correct, correct.
Okay. Thinking about the library, I mean, now it's done, it's getting built. I guess it opens later this year?
From what I understand, yes.
Yeah, barring rain or locusts or who knows what.
Correct.
Offshooting from that issue is the question of what's going to happen with the old building. Tell us what's going on there and what your feeling is about the proper disposition of the old building once the new library is opened.
The Chamber of Commerce and the Aberdeen Conventions Bureau, mm-hmm, came to us and wanted to put a bid in on that. And I'm not exactly sure what the number was that they wanted to give to us, but in my opinion, I think we need to put that up for bids and sell it to whoever wants to turn it into something profitable.
Sure. Private sector, yes, nonprofits, anybody who wants, correct, to take a shot at it.
Yeah, and if they want to take a shot at it, fine. I'm not sure if we don't know what the bid would be. So I would think that it's a good retail location for somebody, and we could collect on tax revenue as a result of that.
Sure. So, would the city, I suppose, in terms of revenue, the city would come out ahead if it were owned by a private entity rather than a nonprofit or some other entity,
correct,
right?
Yeah, but you know, the Chamber of Commerce does pay taxes. They will
pay taxes.
Yep. But they wouldn't pay a sales tax. You know, if a retail outlet bought that property, they would be subject to sales tax as well.
Right, the actual business happening,
correct,
in the,
right,
building.
And, you know, City of Aberdeen would get that revenue as well.
Sure. So,
and that's my stand on it, and it may be unpopular with some, but I believe we need to put it up to the highest bidder and see what happens.
Sure. Well, we know what got you to run the first time 5 years ago, but here you are again. It's 2017. You want to be on city council again. What big issues are moving you this time to say, let me do this for a while longer?
It's all about the people, Corey. I get people calling me all the time, you know, saying they have problems in certain areas. I try and go to work and help solve those problems. And I've got some examples here if you want to listen
to
them.
We love examples. What are the problems we got to fix in this next 5 years?
Well, first of all, let me just go over a couple of things that happened since I've been on City Commission. There's residents of Northeast 5th Avenue and Boyd Street, and they came to me and said that the storm sewer system was backing up when we have an inch of rain, and it backed up to their foundations. And they were concerned that if they were to get 2 or 3, 4 inches of rain, you know, at a rapid pace, that they would, you know, water would enter their homes and cause them problems. So they came to me and they said, Mark, we got to do something here. And so I went to our city engineers and they showed me the map, and they said, they showed the pipes underneath the ground that were adequate, you know, 18-inch pipe or whatever, supposed to be adequate to take away all the storm sewer system, or the water away. But it turned out that we finally had to have them go in with cameras, go down in the ground and send a remote camera in there and measure the pipes. It turned out they weren't adequate. So the pipe system has been replaced now. And they also have a holding pond down there to collect all of the storm sewer system water. And so that's a problem that was fixed. That was the first thing that I got a call on when I got on city council.
Sure.
It took 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
It took 5 years to do it.
Yeah, when did they finish that holding pond?
Just this spring.
So have we had a chance to test that out yet to see the drainage go?
It seems to be working fine.
Good.
It seems to be
good.
Working fine. So that was one thing. There's another, people to 300 block on South J Street, and that's not even my district, and I want to reiterate the fact that I won't listen to anybody in Aberdeen, not just the people of the Northeast District. I'm not going to shove them off on on someone in their own district that they don't know. I know a lot of people in Aberdeen. I really do. And they shouldn't feel shy about calling me about problems that they may have with city government.
And there's no rule on that either. I can really talk to any city councilman I want to about my problems.
Exactly right. And I don't believe that. I think it should be a citywide vote, not just a district vote. It, to me, that seems weird because I represent everybody in Aberdeen. If anybody calls me from any place in town in Aberdeen, I will represent them. I'll do my best to do that. But these people on a block of South, 300 block of South J, they called me and they had a problem with a leaking artesian well in their backyard. It wasn't their backyard. It was across the alley into Safe Harbor.
Okay.
Safe Harbor.
Yeah.
That was in their alley, or on their property, actually. And this leaking artesian well was leaking all year long, even in the wintertime. And it just created a bad smell, and it created mounds of ice in the wintertime. And it was just... It was very uncomfortable for these people on South J, 300 block of South J. And so I went to the city manager first, then we went to the city engineer, and it's city government, state government, national government takes a long time to work. And but anyway, it took a couple of years, and finally we got that well plugged. And so there's no problem there anymore. So I just enjoy working with the people and helping solve problems. Because there's problems.
Yeah, what you're talking about, they aren't the kind of, you know, long-term or big, you know, high-level policy questions.
No.
These are just practical problems come up and we figure out how to solve them.
Correct.
Yeah. Nuts and bolts of this.
And I saw in the that you were in the paper on Sunday. Weren't you talking about speaking of nuts and bolts and just handling the question? Didn't a question come to you about crime and how we're dealing with it? And wasn't your quote basically that we're fine? Like it didn't seem like you were appealing to people's fear, is what I seem to remember, right?
And no, there shouldn't be a problem. You know, the question was, which I was appalled at the question. That Aberdeen's population has increased 10% and crime has increased 50%. That's wrong. That's
right.
Totally wrong.
Right.
And I just talked to Dave McNeil about that, our police chief, who's doing a great, very, very, very good mm-hmm. job, by the way, last night about that question. He said, well, boy, that doesn't make any sense, Mark. And he showed me the stats. And the only crime that has spiked by 27% is the meth problem mm-hmm. that we have. And it has to do with drugs.
Right.
The rest of the crime has gone down.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, I don't know who entered that question, but they had their facts wrong mm-hmm. when they asked the question. And I was disappointed in that
right.
question.
Right.
And I was disappointed in a couple of the questions, to tell you the truth. Mm-hmm. There's only three or four of them, I think. You know?
Yeah, it seemed like it went really quickly.
Yeah.
And also, completely unrelated, how do you feel about the chickens being legal in Aberdeen now? Were you pro or against?
I didn't have a problem with it, you know. You know, and I got a lot of I don't want to say, I got a lot of grief.
Sure.
From a lot of people.
Right.
That said, what are you doing talking about chickens coming to Aberdeen? Well, you know, there's a lot of young people that want to get involved in raising chickens and in the non-GMO stuff that
sure.
that comes with buying, you know, processed eggs. Oh, excuse me. All right. And I didn't really have a problem with it. And so it passed. It passed fairly easily, to tell you the truth.
And how about there seems like there's a lot of talk lately about the immigrant population in Aberdeen, and some people feel like there's a big problem. Some people feel like there's no problem whatsoever. What do you think?
Well, the problem is that we need to embrace these people and trying to teach them our culture, because they come here, they have no idea how to live in the United States, South Dakota, Aberdeen. And there's an opposition to that. And, you know, and there again, I've gotten a lot of grief on that as well, because I've taken a stand to trying to help these people and trying to help them be a member of our community and learn our ways. And our police chief is doing the same thing. He's working hard to work towards that goal. And my sister, who is a saint, by the way, Sister Myra Remley, she's at PC, and she is a crusader for this movement to help these people. I mean, they're poor people. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Jesus helped the poor.
Right.
And that's my sister's philosophy. She's sister of the presentation. And she is very moved by helping people. That's her life. So, and I am all for it. You know, I'm trying to help her out as any way I can.
One more. What's the future for Aberdeen? What do you want to see?
Well, I don't really have an agenda. I have thoughts about helping people when they have problems. I do believe that Aberdeen can grow. And a lot of our growth is with foreigners. I mean, right now, I mean, we have jobs. And that's the reason they come here. And I would like to be able to work with those people and hopefully get them to adjust to our culture and survive and do well in Aberdeen. There's some resistance to that. So I still want to continue working to help people.
I think the upside of smoking, if there is an upside of smoking, is Mark Remley's voice. There's a good gravel in there. I don't think he got that from doing vocal exercises, but nice and really interesting stuff from both of those guys, and good voices for the radio.
And, you know, and voters were happy to talk to these candidates, because it is important that these candidates get a chance to talk at length about their views. Yeah. We want to give every candidate that opportunity. We're contacting all the other candidates, and we invite any candidate to get a hold of us. We'll be glad to have you on the podcast so that people can hear what you have to offer as a public servant.
And if you know Terry LaFleur, we would also like to talk to him.
We will talk to anybody. Mr. LaFleur, you're welcome on the show. Just be ready. We're going to ask you questions.
All right. Well, so Friday, you're going to be marching for healthcare.
March for healthcare, downtown Aberdeen. We meet at the ward at 5:00. Bring a friend, bring a sign. Talk about how healthcare really is a human right.
If you want to throw a couple of bucks into the tip jar, we would greatly appreciate that. It helps us keep the lights on here with the Dakota Free Press podcast. With that, good job.
Hey, thanks for coming over, Spencer. I think we got another program in the can, as you like to say.
All right, Corey, we'll see you next time.
All right, thanks for listening, everybody.
Bye-bye.